We've qualified for the World Cup. Go and compete.
See, because I have a question.
Okay, I'm having a beer today as well, actually. Which,
nice.
I don't often do on the podcast, but
what bevy is it?
You just couldn't cope with us this week.
It's an O'Hara's double IPA. Okay. I became privy to these double IPAs, which are basically like 7 and 8%. So it's like bang for your buck, you know.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
We'll see how coherent I am at the end of this, because I have another one in the fridge, so I could have a liter of 8% beer in me by the end of it. But we'll see.
Yeah, do you remember when you're younger and you'd always be like, oh yeah, for the a liter of cider, half a liter of vodka. It's like,
yeah,
it's just two cans.
Yeah,
the things we did for street cred.
Mm-hmm. And it wasn't even much fucking cred, because people just saw him total fucking gowls in. Yeah. Puking, yeah. Fucking guy, ring up.
This guy can't be that hammered if he can fucking remember how much he's drank.
That's the fucking street cred I had. It's like, oh look, there's Conor Flynn. The guy who got bollocks last night on a load of cider. What a legend. Yeah, that's it. He's so drunk. That's... He's so cool.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you about the brass stuff. It, mm-hmm. The lips, how hard is it to get the old lips blowing brass?
Yeah, it's probably one of the hardest things, really.
Yeah, I thought so. Do you have to do that kind of, like, do you have to double your lips kind of thing, right? Have to make it all.
So you just purse your lips together and blow. And when you blow through, they should vibrate, they should buzz. But you have to make sure you're not puffing out your cheeks. So you kind of tighten the corners of your mouth and keep it like the center of your mouth kind of loose.
Yeah. Okay.
It's really not that hard. If you say to someone, buzz your lips, they'll probably do a pretty good job. And then try and say like, well, make it like a low buzz or a high buzz. And people kind of do it intuitively anyway. But yeah, if you try and explain it, it gets a bit complicated.
But that's your job, though, isn't it? Explaining it.
Yeah, but it's easier to it's easier to demonstrate it than explain it.
I'm kidding. Yeah, sorry.
It's kind of like saying, you know, just like cross your arms. And if someone said, I don't know what that means, and if you try to explain to someone how to cross their arms, it gets a bit confusing.
So, yeah, yeah. It's like football theory, you know? Wayne Rooney can say, yeah, just put that in the top corner. It's like, okay.
Mm.
Just how do you do it? Well, you use your foot and you kick it in that direction, you know? Not that he's a very good coach.
It's probably like that with him coaching him, yeah.
That's it.
Just spicy it.
How do we win games? Yeah, how do we win games? Well, you could do a bicycle kick there in the Manchester Derby. That'd do it. Yeah, good man, Wayne.
It would suck playing for him as well, because I'd imagine if you were a striker and you had a striker coach, you'd be like, oh, fuck. But at least the defenders could be like, sure, he was never able to do it. Rooney could kind of do a bit of everything, to be fair. Mm. So
yeah.
You can't be like, sure, you don't know what it's like to play midfield. He'd be like, I'll fucking do it now better than you, cunt.
Has a striker ever become a great manager? Former striker.
Stuart Pearce.
I can just hear it, lad, saying Ole right now.
Oh, very good. Very good. I wouldn't have thought of it.
Yeah, of course you wouldn't. He wasn't a great striker either.
Yeah. That's Mike turned off after like 2 minutes. Oh, well.
He was like the Chicharito of his day.
Yeah, yeah.
Very, well, that's it. Very accurate.
Chicharito is in playing for LA Galaxy currently. Found that out last night.
Hmm.
Yep.
He's not relevant.
No.
Neither is Ole.
Like Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Yeah. Well, it's an interesting topic, I guess, to bring up, because we never really speak about United on the podcast. But one of the actual football things I wanted to talk about, because I think it has so many avenues for discussion off of it, is something that happened like a week ago. It was the fan protests at Old Trafford. I wanted to get your kind of thoughts on it and like the repercussions of that game being postponed against Liverpool. Yeah, and you saw the Glazers as well afterwards, right? Oh, whatever his name is, the Glazer with the kind of like bald head and the ponytail guy. Mm-hmm. You saw him on Sky Sports, right?
Yeah. I think fair play to the supporters. Like, no one condones violence and all that shit, but
no,
at the end of the day, see, in my head, like, United fans are scum, right? but obviously I have friends that are United fans, and when you just think of them as fellow fans and people like you and me who fucking hate the owners of their club and have been putting up with it for ages. Now, I say putting up with it, they also put up with an awful lot of winning leagues, and they, you know, there's a kind of I don't know, it's like they weren't as pissed off back around then, but then I suppose they were as well. But you know, they're just fans who want the best for their club, and okay, there's always going to be one or two fans go over the top, but for the most part, I think, do you know, they did a good job, their voices were heard, and hopefully the Glazers do fuck off, because no one likes them.
Wish it had happened at the Arsenal protest as well.
Mm.
Wish it had happened before the game against Villarreal too.
Well, that's the thing.
Wish it had happened before every game this season. Fuck. What a dog shit season.
But that was my taking from the protest too, is that like it was completely successful. The disruption caused to the club, to the league, the Premier League, and the fact it was just plastered over, you know, the news, social media, it was just everywhere. And for the most part, it was done in, like you said, like a non-aggressive way. Yeah, okay, breaking an entry, but like that's the worst they do. I mean, we obviously condone that fellow who was like throwing cameras of like reporters around. That's obviously a bit shitty, but you know, I think the media kind of, you know, really zoned in on that when there was much more going on. But yeah, very successful. That's something that a lot of clubs can copy, because it does work. And United are going to pay the price on the pitch in the coming weeks with their new schedule that they have.
Mm, yeah, big time. Yeah, I think if a group of supporters are that unhappy with their owners, I think it was probably the best example of how to deal with it or how to protest it. And like you said, they have three games now this week. So, I mean, that's going to surely affect them on the pitch. So I think, and I mean, as far as I know, they plan on doing the same at their next home game or similar. So if they disrupt another game and another game, then the owners can't just start to ignore it. And, you know, when fans are back in the stadium, are they going to boycott games? Like, are they not going to be selling tickets? So it's definitely interesting. Yeah.
I love seeing it. I thought it was great. And I was joking about wishing it had happened at the Arsenal protest, but because it couldn't have happened after that, because there was so much security around. But I feel like Arsenal can be even more aggrieved about their owners than United. And geez, I hope they keep protesting now, Kroenke, because there's been more protests organized. I hope they keep doing it forever, as long as he's in the club.
Mm.
I didn't even know that there were lots of protests around him, to be honest.
Yeah, well, see. It didn't get much attention, I guess.
No, yeah.
No, not as much. But it was, just as successful. I know they didn't break in, but it caused disruption before or after games and stuff. So, great to see. Is the replacement for Kroenke good, though, Flynn? Are you happy with this guy that was the founder or the owner of Spotify taking over Arsenal?
I mean, what could be worse, really? I couldn't imagine a worse owner unless... I mean, I was going to say unless the club was going down the tubes, but the club is going down the tubes consistently. Since he bought it, he's just been going down and down and down for years. And how much worse can it get? How much worse could he be?
I have heard that he's not even really... I've heard that he's like not a proven supporter, that he just says he's supported Arsenal for his life. But
there are tweets of him from a few years ago talking about Arsenal. So unless he had it in his mind then to do it, to try to buy Arsenal, or maybe this is all just one big publicity stunt for Spotify.
Are there any pros to having the Spotify owner as the Arsenal owner?
Maybe I get free Spotify premium.
Yeah. Not crunky.
Yeah. Get a loyalty.
Wow, this is with him. Yeah, this is brilliant. Yeah, absolutely. Where does he sign?
He doesn't even have that much money, this fella. Daniel Ek, the Spotify.
I've heard that. Yeah.
So if he bought him, I mean, that doesn't really matter anyway, because Kroenke isn't exactly spending his own money as it is. So it's like we don't even have a rich owner.
No.
So it doesn't matter. As long as he just didn't take money out of the club, it'd be fine.
Because that is the big issue, right? Is the fact that the clubs are being mismanaged, because I know you mentioned there, Handy, that, you know, where were United fans protesting, I guess, as badly as this when, you know, they were winning trophies and stuff, but a lot of it's dried up. I mean, United are in like the longest dry patch like of our lifetimes, really. I mean, they dominated the 90s and into the 2000s. So it's kind of been a bit sour for them. And especially with the Glazers, they're just leveraging United as like not just a tax write-off, but like a debt write-off for their bigger ventures, like the Buccaneers. So it's, I don't know, like it's very English football to mm-hmm. want to have, like, you know, passionate managers and fans and owners. And it's obviously not going to be like that always where there's business opportunities involved. But
mm-hmm.
yeah, there is like this invasion now of just, you know, businessmen that are looking to just kind of, it's kind of money laundering without it being illegal.
Yeah, it's fucked up. And I think the United situation is probably the worst, because they are kind of borrowing money off the United funds, and it's I don't exactly understand it, but it's like they're using Man United money as their money, I think, is how I understand it anyway. But I mean, the whole thing is kind of fucked, because every group of supporters doesn't want this, you know, American type owner who's just looking to make a buck while also being successful a lot of the time. And but they still want Haaland to be signed or Mbappe to be signed. So they want it to be really cleanly run, really organized, and but also splash 300 million each transfer window, which just doesn't make sense. And that just can't happen. And even like Gary Neville, he's one who's like fucking running his mouth 24/7. And I know Dave kind of pulled him up on it as well. And like, he seems to be throwing fucking Liverpool and United owners together and Liverpool and United supporters together, even though they're totally separate issues and separate opinions on owners. And he, like I say about United supporters, maybe weren't as loud in the noughties as they are now because they were successful, but he's the one who was earning fucking what, like 200k, 150k a week off the Glazers, and now he's giving shit about them. Like, why wasn't he speaking up back then? You know, I think he's the biggest hypocrite of any of them at the minute.
Yeah, yeah. But he's also, you know, involved in like the boys club Salford, which yes. have like basically bankrolled their way up non-league. I was delighted to see, I think it was yesterday, maybe it was today, days blend into one, that Salford missed out on the playoffs. I think they're in League Two now. Because, yeah, it's kind of the same. If you're a fucking Shrewsbury fan, you probably think the exact same of Gary Neville and Nicky Butt as, you know, we do about the Glazers. So, yeah, Gary Neville, he can get in the bin. But, like, I mean, that's not new news.
That's it.
I wanted to ask you, Finn, I guess, as a follow up to the point that you made there, Hanley, about like you can't have splashing 300 million and have like, you know, fans of the club and not like businessmen. But then you have the German, the Bundesliga model. Maybe you'd care to kind of take that side of things, Flynn, because that's proven to be successful.
Well, the 50 plus one system, I think it's called, where it's just like the fans are, no one person can own the majority of the club or something, and that's the majority of it has to be, I don't know, does it have to be owned by the fans, but people other than businessmen or whatever the fuck, which would be ideal, I think. Like the Bundesliga, even though it's really lopsided in the Bundesliga, like Bayern is just so far ahead of everyone in that league that it doesn't seem like a great advert for the system. But and Schalke also, they vastly overspent. People go on about some clubs in England overspending. Schalke fucked themselves really bad. They spent money they didn't have. They did Leeds on it, and they got relegated. Hamburg, another big enough club, has gotten relegated. But, I mean, maybe that is an argument in favour of it, actually, because those clubs were overspending. They weren't very well run, and so they got punished. Whereas clubs that are well run do well in Germany. Like Eintracht Frankfurt, who the fuck heard of them anywhere near the top a few years ago, other than they were in the 1955 European Cup final with Real Madrid or something. I think they were, actually. It was like 7-3.
I was going to say, if that was a guess, that was a really good one.
No, I think someone once called that the greatest game of football of all time, or some bullshit. Eintracht Frankfurt versus Real Madrid. So like clubs like that they have a chance, and it's not, you know, Bayern are like their own case. Is there any competing with them? Probably not. Well, I don't know. Actually, Leipzig did well this year, but Leipzig are not. I'm just going in circles here because I'm like, that's a great system. Except for that. Fucking Leipzig and Bayern are like kind of exceptions. Bayern is an exception because they're just so much bigger than everyone else, and Leipzig because they're getting bullshit workarounds. It makes me think there would be bullshit workarounds if they ever tried it in England as well. Like, everyone would just end up like Leipzig.
Probably. I think just the biggest thing is the control part, is that, you know, you could have the Glazers, you could have Kroenke as, you know, owners or majority stakeholders in the club, but they'd only ever surmount to the 49%. They could still make their part, and they could still sign Haaland.
And we can't get rid of Kroenke as well.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing anyone can do unless he decides to sell, because no one else has any power in the club. Also, by the way, the fella he bought out to get full control of Arsenal went to Everton and has invested like 500 million into Everton out of his own pocket in the past few years. Usmanov, yeah, fucking great.
Unlucky.
I don't really want him in the club either. He's a bit like Abramovich. I don't like him either, but still, if it's a choice between an asshole who invests money and an asshole who doesn't even know the club are playing football. That was the story, that he didn't even know Arsenal were playing the Europa League. He was in like a meeting for like a Call of Duty e-sport team or something, and yet someone told him Arsenal were playing.
Yeesh.
Yeah.
These are the problems. These are the problems.
Would you prefer an asshole who doesn't spend money, or a country that like beheads gays on your club?
Probably an asshole who doesn't spend money. Yeah, to be honest.
I think 100%. Yeah.
Like that's the thing. We kind of hear given out about like. It's Malcolm is the name, right? Malcolm Glazer. I keep forgetting what his name. I know there's brothers, right, or whatever, but we'll say Malcolm. He's called Malcolm now. You know, maybe he doesn't give a shit and he cares more about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, but yeah, he's not making money off of death and people dying, so
yeah,
you know, fair play for that.
Yeah,
well, I mean, not directly. He is indirectly, but not directly.
Yeah, it's weird because now Chelsea are playing City in the final of the Champions League. Can you think of a more dislikable possible pairing? than them. I suppose PSG, PSG and Man City. Mm-hmm. But to be honest, I almost dislike Chelsea more just because, well, Chelsea's whole history. About Chelsea. Jesus. It's almost like I fucking hate every team in football. Even Arsenal now.
Yeah, but that's the thing. If the teams got punished like they should have been for the Super League, like we'd have had the likes of well-run clubs like Crystal Palace in Europe at a chance of bettering themselves. But mm-hmm. here we are.
Like Palace.
Because our model is good. Let's be honest. We were bailed out in 2010 by like Steve Parrish and a couple of lads. And he had to reinvest for us to stabilize in the Premier League. And he sold part of his ownership to American investors, but they still don't have the majority. So he's a Palace fan. He's from South London. So he is very much the club's interests at heart, but he uses their funds for us to be, you know, a viable football team. I think that's the way. It's just, it's hard to do that.
Mm-hmm. I feel like there's been plenty of times on this podcast you've shit on Steve Parrish as well, though.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Don't get me wrong. He's, you know, there's questionable things he should be doing better, but that's only because, you know, I'm a Palace fan, but also, like, their worst critic. You know, I'm never really happy, but can't not... Yeah, you know, I can't really... I just remember back to 2010. Yeah, this is it. Yeah, I know I'm not.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Next time we do that, I know we say that a few times, but next time we do it, we should just let it be so, like dead silence for a good 10 seconds afterwards.
Yeah.
Yeah, people are going to start worrying about us.
Oh, we're not
worrying about themselves.
Yeah, we're not talking about death and we're not talking about religion today. Chalk it down. It's not happening. We are going to talk about drugs, though. So
yes,
hold on to your hats.
All right.
But drugs and death are, you know, unavoidable.
Mm-hmm.
Most drugs are unavoidable.
Well, I mean the crossing over of topics, you know.
Oh, right.
Not that, you know.
Yeah, drugs equals death.
Well, everything equals death.
Oh, so. No, we're not going there. We're not going there.
Nice. The follow on, I guess, from the process is that, and I guess it's again another interesting topic that we seldom talk about on the podcast, is the rescheduling has led to United playing the previously scheduled game today, Sunday. Then they have a game, was it Thursday? And then Sunday again, they've got three games in a week. Is that right? Yeah, three games in the week.
I think so, yeah.
Ole Gunnar Solskjaer says that's highly unprofessional, unfair, unsporting, and has thrown off his season. Agree or disagree that a club second in the league with as big a squad depth as they have should be concerned about three games in the week?
Well, I didn't know he said that, number one. Okay. I think... I don't want to be too harsh here because... I want to be somewhat credible, but I think, yeah, come on. He should be able to put out a team today, a different team Thursday. I know it's against Liverpool and they want to win, but even if they put out their second string team, it should still be a pretty strong team, and then put out the same team he played today next Sunday. That's not beyond the realms of possibility, you know? And am I right in saying they don't have any major injuries right now?
Well, after today's game, I think Maguire is injured.
Oh, is he?
But, yeah, but other than that...
I know Martial is out. I don't know when he's back exactly, but...
Sure, they don't like Martial anymore.
Yeah. So, look, they should have enough depth in the squad to fucking play three... I know three games in a week is a lot, but it's not like it's three games in 4 days or something. So, they'll be all right. He'll dry his tears. He'll be all right.
Do you remember when football came back after the very first lockdown? And we just had like all the seasons around the world just squeezed in like a very short period of time. That was fucking... And Champions League, one-legged Champions League knockouts like every week. Fuck. Mm. That was crazy.
Yeah. it was like a festival of football. It was like having the Euros, but with multiple leagues. It was brilliant.
Especially after not having anything for so long.
Yeah. The first game back was crap, though, wasn't it? Sheffield United Villa. It was like, I can't wait for this game. It's fucking rubbish.
I just remember watching some Bundesliga and really only caring about Timo Werner because I was like, oh, this lad's going to be at Liverpool next year. Look at him scoring all those goals. This is class. But really, I didn't care at all. And then that didn't even happen, so.
Okay. Yeah.
I think that guy's given a hard rap as well.
I do too. I've been saying it through the season. Oh,
yep.
Although I don't go out of my way to do it because he's a Chelsea scum player. So, but he is a lot better than people go on about. He's miles better than Morata or Torres ever were when people were comparing him to them. He's miles better than they were.
At Chelsea.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Of course. Not overall. Jesus. No.
Yeah.
No, although maybe better than Morata.
Maybe Morata, but he's not. Yeah. You know what my point
is. The fucking Liverpool fan just has to get in that. Neymar's brilliant at Liverpool.
I have a role on this podcast and I'm fulfilling it. Okay.
Fine. That's grand.
Let's talk about some drugs.
Yeah. Do we want to?
Do you know what we're talking about with the drugs thing, by the way? Just because we do have a bit of time. So
no, I have no idea what you're on about.
Oh, at the end of the last podcast, one of us was like, don't do drugs, kids. And I think you were like, oh, yeah, let's talk about drugs next time.
Oh, right. So it was I said this.
I think it was so you. I think, yeah.
Yeah. So it's on you, Flynn, to like have this segment. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Be fleshed out with all the info needed and stuff.
All the stories of taking drugs, all your anecdotes. We'll say beforehand, like, none of us have ever taken drugs, but we will recount secondhand information as our own for the purpose of this podcast.
Or come up with a fictional.
Can we just use that?
Alter ego. Alter ego is such a fucking cop out.
Yeah. My Australian alter ego. Be like, this podcast contains themes of an adult nature.
Not bad.
That wasn't bad.
That was good. Yeah.
The discretion.
I'm convinced. You do a New Zealand accent.
It's the same.
It's pretty much the same, I think. Well, they every E is an I. I think. Get in the water. No. There's a shake. There's a shake in the water.
Yeah. Weasel the chicken.
Yeah. Get in the water.
Yeah, because I know Neighbours and Home and Away are like the two soaps that are on like RT2, and one is Australian and one is New Zealand, and I never know which is which.
Are they? I thought they were both Australian.
Really?
I think one is New Zealand, yeah. I can't remember which.
It's like New Zealand and Australia we always think of as being basically the same thing, but like Australia and New Zealand are the same distance away as like Ireland and Russia.
I know.
The same.
I have all this information here. Oh, well, Home and Away is Australian, so I'm probably full of shit. Unless Neighbours is.
What are they getting closer each day to in Home and Away?
Death.
I think because it's like every 5 seconds they take a break because people just have no attention span. If you're watching that, you need to be reminded of what's going on at every like 5 minutes, and then they cut to a break and it's like closer each day, home and away, but
very good.
They never said what are they getting closer to. Closer to what?
Home
and away. Sure, they can't be getting closer each day if they're home and away.
Well, like, just they to get clarify, closer
as a family, right?
Yeah.
Or friends.
They're both Australian, and I was just full of shit. So
find us a Kiwi soap now, please.
Oh, Shortland Street. I just found it. Yeah.
Is that New Zealand?
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Never heard of it.
That's heard also on RT. Yeah.
Speaking of soaps, The Bill, the team tune to The Bill, fucking banger.
Yeah.
I don't think I know it.
Did it.
This is just an hour podcast of Flynn serenading us with soap opera themes. This is fucking do Coronation Street.
Fuck, what's Coronation Street again? Oh, I can't remember.
I can only think of Father Ted.
I can't. It's that strong.
Yes.
I just think of like a tabby cat on a like a red brick roof.
Yeah, just want to kick it off every time I see it. Just yeet it into the fucking shed.
I mean, the most iconic one has to be the dum 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 da da da.
Well, because they actually incorporate that into the show, the way it goes, like a shocking moment, and then the drums kick in, and you're like, ah. Whereas the other things, they just cut to the music. They just cut to the credits, like.
But it is a really good piece of music, like, you know, even by itself, you feel suspenseful. So fair play to whoever, I guess, came up with that.
They released a song of the team song. They put words to it after the show came out and released it as a song. And people thought that it had been the other way around, like they had taken the song as their team song. I think they called it Anyone Can Fall in Love, which is very true on EastEnders, because like every 5 minutes people are in love with someone else or they're getting married, and they always get married in the countryside. The cast must love it.
It's a proper like inner city thing though, isn't it? It's like, oh, we'll have a big lovely white wedding in the countryside away from the doom and gloom of London.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine a wedding in a city, like at a city church.
Yeah, well, out to like, what was it, Wolford Square? What was the square called in EastEnders?
Fuck.
Albert Square.
Albert Square.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
There's been like 28 murders there in the past month. It's like a Syrian war zone.
Yeah, the Met Police are bemused. They're like, where is this coming from?
My Siri, I just activated Siri by saying the Syrian war zone. It's giving me information on the Syrian civil war.
Jesus Christ.
Thank you, Siri. Okay, fucking.
All right, bitch. Wow.
Yeah.
What are we going to talk about now? I mean, no football, I guess. We've covered that.
Hard drugs.
Hard drugs. Well, have you guys ever... I can't ask you. Do you know anyone who does hard drugs? But have you ever been offered hard drugs?
Depends what you find. What are we defining as?
Anything harder than cocaine.
Okay. I'll tell you what, right? I'm really clueless about drugs in terms of, I mean, I know what cocaine is. I know what weed is. I don't know what PCP is. I don't know what form it comes in, or acid or LSD. I don't know if they're all the same thing or all totally different things. Hmm. So that's where I stand. So maybe I've been offered something that's hard and I just don't know, but probably I just said no to whatever it was.
Yeah, more than likely.
If you don't know what it is, kids, don't stick it in your nose.
Yeah.
Don't stick it anywhere for that matter.
Yeah, it's gonna stay.
Yeah.
That leaves it open.
You know, in movies, I was talking about with this with someone the other day that movies very often they'll have scenes where like characters start doing drugs and they'll do like cocaine or something. Or they just smoke marijuana. And like they'll be showing these drugs as being like damaging. Like you'll end up in a fucking wreck and paranoid or whatever. Or you'll get murdered by drug dealers. But they also show them sometimes just as part of like a party scene. Like there are movies where people just do cocaine and they don't die later on. But like there's no movie where someone starts doing heroin and they're fine. It's never been on screen where someone starts injects anything and they're okay in the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
In fact, anytime someone injects anything in a movie, they're going to die from it.
Interesting.
I think. Yeah. I've never seen it. Yeah. I've never seen heroin portrayed in a positive way.
That's what I was going to say.
I don't think it should be.
Never is.
Well, no. I mean, you could say the same about a load of stuff, even smoking and alcohol.
Yeah,
it's true. But I mean, my understanding, probably from everything I've seen in movies, is that heroin is just about the worst thing you can do.
That's it. That's what I'm saying. Is that like movies tell us that heroin is like the thing, you're gonna die if you start doing heroin.
But it is like, I mean, that's like junkies do heroin. Like that's why people end up properly on the streets. I would say more so than alcohol or fags.
Oh, actually, Pulp Fiction, kind of in a really roundabout way. Because Vincent, John Travolta in that movie does heroin. That's what he's got. He's got like a bag of heroin. And what's her name? Uma Thurman. You've all seen Pulp Fiction, right?
Yeah.
Uma Thurman finds the bag and she thinks it's cocaine. So she snorts it. And so she has like a epileptic fit or whatever it is. And John Travolta later dies in the movie. But he doesn't die because of heroin. He gets killed. He gets killed by Bruce Willis. He's having a great time with heroin. And Uma Thurman only has a bad time because she thinks it's cocaine. If she, like, there's no implication that the heroin was going to be a problem if she hadn't thought it was something else. And John Travolta did not die because of heroin. He died because of a lack of faith in God.
Oh, really?
Well, I mean, isn't that what happens? That Samuel L. Jackson, they get shot at. The two of them get shot at. Yeah. Do you notice the scene I'm talking about? And like the bullets go through them. Samuel L. Jackson says it was an act of God, and John Travolta's like, that's a load of bullshit. So Samuel L. Jackson leaves. He gives up the hitman life, but John Travolta doesn't. And he gets killed the next day by Bruce Willis or whatever.
Okay, I get you. Yeah.
And while we're speaking of like Pulp Fiction, Flynn, with your, I guess, movie expertise or movie background, do you have any more insight into Marcellus Wallace? That's his name, right? Marcellus, yeah. Right? The bag with the golden glow.
Right. Well, what that's a reference to is a movie called Kiss Me Deadly. The whole movie is loads of references. It's like everything is a reference to a different movie, like pulp movies. And Kiss Me Deadly had a briefcase in it, which was the same thing. People would open it up. You would only see like the glow on their faces and you wouldn't know what's in it. But later on, you do find out what's in it. It's a like nuclear material or whatever. And when someone opens it up, their face melts off. And that was referenced in Raiders of the Lost Ark. You know, the end of that movie where their faces all melt off. Like that was also a reference to Kiss Me Deadly, where like someone opens something and it glows in their face and their face just fucking disintegrates and they burst into flames, which is great.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. Okay, cool.
Just very quickly, what's a pulp movie?
Pulp is kind of like Pulp Fiction, like Pulp Fiction magazines or stories were kind of like really kind of cheap, like genre stories. They'd be like detective magazines, or they'd be like, they'd usually be kind of, what, how would you say? What's like a, not grimy, they'd be kind of trashy, I suppose. They'd be kind of like, you know, they weren't like high art or anything. They were just, you know, a sexy woman, a dead body, a hard-faced detective, you know, and they'd have like, the dialogue would be like, you know, it's you and me, babe, straight down the line. That kind of stuff.
Kind of basic, like.
I wouldn't say basic, but it kind of, it became its own thing. Like pulpy stories were just those kind of stories which weren't like for kids really, or weren't for, they weren't audiences. You wouldn't get dressed up in a tuxedo to go see a pub movie, like, you know.
Yeah. All right. I gotcha.
Yeah. And I think Pulp Fiction, the movie title, has a double meaning where it's sort of like pulp is, in fact, they do reference this at the very start. The movie begins with a dictionary definition of pulp. So I didn't even realize this. Yeah, so that's definitely what it's getting at, that it shows two different definitions of pulp. It shows pulp, the definition I just talked about, and then pulp, which is the definition of, you know, like wood pulp. If you put pulp wood into a machine and it turns it into pulp, and it becomes like a like a mass of all things smushed together. And that's what Pulp Fiction is. It's all these stories smushed together, kind of, really.
Tarantino, man. He's someone that's also heavily influenced by drugs, right? So,
I guess so. Yeah, and black exploitation movies. He wishes he was black. Have you ever seen that video of him? It's like where he's talking in a black person voice on a like a black TV show.
No.
Oh, God. Like, I've seen some things that make you cringe. This will make your toes curl. I think... I think he was promoting Django or something, and he was on he was on this show, like BET or something, or like this black TV channel, and he was on it with like Samuel L. Jackson and Jamie Foxx and the rest, and he is talking to the host in the host's, not even in the host voice, but in a like a black voice. You know, like if you spend time talking to someone with a, like a Northern Ireland accent, sometimes you start talking back to them in a Northern Ireland accent or something like that. He goes way overboard. If anyone's listening to this and they haven't seen it, go look it up. Like Quentin Tarantino, black man voice or something. It is fucking,
it's a dodgy to Google that.
Oh, Jesus. It's hard to watch. You won't get 30 seconds into it before you think, oh, God, I can't watch any more of this. It's hilarious.
I have to watch it now.
Yeah. No, you should.
Yeah, but he's crazy. But then most kind of, you know, people that are really good in their different areas are a bit loco. So
I guess, yeah, we'll leave him off. We'll leave him off, yeah.
He goes into the middle section of opinions for the podcast. You know, we have the right-hand side with people we don't like, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, and the left, people that we do like, Frank Lampard. And Tarantino is sandwiched between them.
Yeah, exactly. Couldn't have said it better.
Yeah, he's there with a, I don't know, Glenn Whelan.
And did you see Wes Houlihan won promotion with Cambridge and he was drinking Guinness after the game? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's cool. Fair play to him.
He's on his way back.
What could have been?
I know. It's a bit depressing to think about. He's probably the best Irish player that we've had in a long time. I mean, it sounds weird to say that because he's like, what, 40-something? So he can't... he's like, oh, he was like a young kid who never got the chance. It's no, he's like an old man who never got the chance.
Yeah, because he did get called up to... very, very late. And then he was gone.
Yeah, we just felt it was too late then, but sure, he could have probably kept playing.
Yeah. Oh, Wes.
Oh, well.
Oh, well, yeah. I
wonder,
you know,
did
I was thinking,
he ever do PCP?
PCP?
That was
like,
in the Guinness.
I don't even know for sure, but I think PCP, you smoke it.
Okay, thanks. That's all I wanted to know.
I'm fairly sure.
I don't know what smoked or snorted or...
You can do most things with most things, I think. I think you can like ingest things if it's prepared right. You can take things most ways. Like,
I sound like I just have a stash of drugs here that I just don't know what to do with.
Adrian's writing like, labels out right now and sticking
there's
them
a load of hash here. How do I ingest it?
Up ass.
Everything up the bum. If in doubt, up your arse.
I think taking things up your arse is like, it makes it way stronger though.
Really?
Oh my. Yeah.
Imagine smoking makes the doobie person up way your stronger.
Yeah. It's the X-Men who hasn't got his own story yet. He absorbs the power of anything he shoves up his ass. He's got the power of a rhino.
That could be Pulp Fiction.
Yeah, hey, yeah. Marcellus Wallace has the power of two hillbillies.
I was thinking ahead of time, I guess, in terms of like, you know, how can we link drugs to sports or to football? And it's not really a drug, but you could argue it is. It's an addiction, I suppose. But one thing that's heavily, heavily linked to sport, and we're starting to see some pushback on it recently, Forest Green have denounced it as a sponsor, but gambling. Mm-hmm. Gambling is big in football, and it is an addiction. Yeah. And you hear lots and lots of stories of people, well, not ending too well.
Yeah, it's always the argument about, well, you know, people should be allowed to make their own choice. Why are you telling people what to do? It's because with certain things, like gambling, you get a compulsion to do it and you can't even control yourself. And you end up ruining your life and the lives of everyone around you. And you're just a massive drain on everything. And you die miserable. Very often. And there are certain things that happens more often than with, and that has more money behind it, that can be legislated for and should be legislated for in a way that, you know, people can get addicted to anything. But, you know, people aren't ruining their lives flying a kite, even though you could get addicted to flying a kite.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly.
Yeah, it was something I never really got into. And, you know, I've been down to the bookies and I've put a bet on, or like Cheltenham, I've thrown a few quid on a horse. But it's just... I don't know. I just don't get the buzz off it. No, I remember there was one time I decided that if I was like, Liverpool win a majority of their games. So if I put like a set amount of money on Liverpool every week to win their game, I'm surely going to come out with more money. And I think like the first week, I don't know, I put €2 down. I got like €6 back or something. Then the next week they were playing Hull at home. I put €2 down and your man was like, are you sure? And I was like, yes, I'm fucking sure. I know what I'm doing here, sir. I was like 16. And then I came back and sure enough, they won. And he gave me back my €2 and the 40 cent with it. And I was like, this is a fucking waste of my time. There is no way to beat the bookies. Like, they're always going to lose.
There's not. And there's a reason for that. And I like this, the same as drink for me, right? It's, I have kind of impulsive tendencies, so it's something I need to be very careful with, but it's definitely something I dabbled with before. But the whole bookies and, you know, beat the bookie stuff is a myth, because it's weighted against you, because it's all probability and maths, right? And if you take like the example of the probability of Liverpool winning that game, and it wasn't the odds, but if it was evens, so that's in decimals, that's like, what, 2.00? Means if you put what, €10 on and it's evens, you win €10 and you get your stake back, so you get 20 quid. And that's using maths to determine that, you know, Liverpool are going to win or should win. But the bookies won't give it to you at that price. They give it to you at it shorter. So like 1.80, which is means you put €10 on, you win 8 back, and then your stake and you get 18. And that's how they do it. And it's kind of bullshit too, because they make like crazy amounts per year, like 400 million profit, like Paddy Power makes a year.
Yeah.
And it's off the general fella that goes down the pub. Yeah, Liverpool United's on the TV. He doesn't actually support either of them, but his mates are playing, mates are interested, and to spice it up for himself, he wants Cavani to score because he likes Cavani and he thinks Cavani's got a good chance, and he'll put 20 quid on him. And, you know, that 20 quid is forgotten the second he gives it over. If he wins, he's hooked. If he loses, 20 quid, and he'll do it again the next weekend. And that's 400 million they get each time a year.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah. I know it's kind of connected, but like there's a lot of talk of cryptocurrency going around and stuff, and I've had a few people get onto me.
Yeah.
Not in our group. I'm actually talking just broader sense. But I've had a couple of people get onto me already, people I'm very close with, to say, oh, look, I'm involved in this cryptocurrency. If you want to buy in, you know, here's a link, because, you know, I'll refer you and whatever. And I'm always told, do not invest more than you're comfortable with. And I can't believe people need to be told that.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like you just said there, your man puts his 20 euro down and it's gone. Of course it's gone. You have to assume it's gone because you shouldn't be banking on that 20 euro to pay your fucking mortgage because it's probably gone. Like the odds are it's gone. And the same with this cryptocurrency, like you invest 100 euro, you have to be comfortable to lose that 100 euro. Because I can't believe people turn around and go, well, I didn't realize it would be gone. Like in this day and age, do people believe that they're entitled to some of that back or something?
No, I think people believe that, like, say, it's when it gets troublesome is when it's like that Cavani example is when Cavani has scored 10 games in a row and he's on fire. And that person who usually puts 20 quid on says, you know what, I've done pretty well with Cavani and I'm going to put 100 quid on. And that 100 quid is actually his rent. I know that's not the price of rent.
Yeah.
And that's when you get in the mindset of like, this is a dead cert. You know, that's the problem. And there's stories as well. It's, I saw recently, I think it's the Happy Hour podcast. They had a guy on, I think he plays FIFA, but like he was saying about like his gambling addiction and how bad it was that he was working and he put a grand on this team in the early kickoff and it lost and he flipped and he went on Wonga.com. I think it's Wonga.com. They're like the
payday loans. Yeah.
Payday loans. That's it. And he took out another 1500 to put on a 3 o'clock dead cert where he would have got like, he put 1,000 down on that loan and he would have got like 1500 quid back, like barely even worth it. And that lost too. And that's the issue. You see, when we do it with 20s and it's like you and I, you know, yeah, look, we're down 50 quid for a day. It's not necessarily the end of the world. We still eat the next day, but it's just when you get to that point.
Yeah.
It's $2,500 in an hour.
I heard someone say that you never feel like you win when you're gambling because if you lose, you lose. And then if you win, you just feel like you should have bet more. So you don't even enjoy it that much.
Yeah, yeah. It's pretty miserable. One of the ones I saw like that worked really well is going back to, again, using the Cavani example, is that the bookies know that they're going to get a lot of their money off of United Liverpool this week. Because people watch it. Big teams, big followings, important game. But they don't have the resources or the care to think about like the smaller games. And I think it's very relevant in like tennis is that there can be, in a summer, there can be so many tennis games going on. You think of Wimbledon, there's like 8 games playing at once. So they don't have the resources or manpower to have people at every games. And if they do, it's usually an official that's officiating the game. So there are people that go to like random places to see random tennis games that are on the bookies websites and try and be quicker than the person who's keeping the score. So someone wins a point in tennis and the guy that's keeping count has to send that message to the bookies and then the odds have to change. And there's someone there watching him do that and does it faster. And has someone on the other end waiting for that bet. And apparently they clean up and their accounts just get like closed down each and every time they do it. But they,
that's another thing. Yeah. The way they'll cut you off if you're winning too much, or they make it extremely difficult to withdraw money if you win anything. Like I saw once that you have to sign up to on these online apps to bet money. You have to give like passports and all this kind of shit. Yeah. And it's so complicated to get your money out once it's in. Like, they'll take anything. They won't ask questions about putting it in. But to get it out, then it's a fucking ball ache.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. To deposit, it's just like username, password. To withdraw, like you said, photographs of your passport, addresses. Yeah. Mug's game. But plenty of people do it within moderation. It's just that it's very shady.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would have no problem if they got rid of it completely. But I'm sure that'll cause some problems as well. And I lose respect for anyone I see doing ads for it, including Arsenal, who sign up to do these fucking ads promoting gambling. And then you have like Ray Winston and Clive Owen shouting at you or trying to make it look cool. Do you know Clive Owen? He's in those ads.
Yeah, yeah.
He looks like a fucking rubbery old ghoul now. and I've no sympathy whatsoever. He could have been Bond. He could have been James fucking Bond. And now look at him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Paddy Power is a pretty funny page, though. I'll give them that.
Oh, no. I hate that most of all. The banter.
They have some good stuff. No?
That's the shady.
The banter is shite. Fuck this fake corporate
banter. But
that's
just to get... it's to get reactions and impressions.
Absolutely.
So that,
but if you can appreciate the posts and not end up getting a Paddy Power account, then best of both worlds. Happy fucking days.
Yes, if you're in that position. But like honestly, like I said, with the impulsive behavior, like people have that from birth, and it's very hard to control it. You know,
they pretend to be your fucking mate. That's what they're doing. They're making it look like they're your friend, or that they're great crack and great
banter. It's grooming.
It's not far off. It's the same principle.
Yeah.
Hanley, you're being groomed by Paddy.
Well, I've never put a Paddy Power bet down in my life.
Not yet.
I just think the odd post they put up is funny. That's all.
Yeah. Well, the other, his other shadiness for gambling. Take Palace, for example, right? Their current sponsor, I think sponsor Villa... Oh, but previously Wolves is W88. It's a gambling company, a betting site.
I recognize
it's not available in the UK. You and I can't set up an account with them.
Oh,
why is it on the front of a Premier League, English Premier League football team shirt? And they are based in, where are they from? It's somewhere like offshore of China, right?
Right.
But their audience is China. It's the knowing that the Premier League will be distributed to China, where there's a huge market, because there's recently gambling laws have changed in the last 10 years in China, where you know they allow and they restrict things as they see fit in China, as we know. And the gambling laws have changed recently, and that's why there's been this absolute surge in betting. Like random betting companies from like China with load of symbols and shit, Chinese writing on people's shirts, which are no benefit to you and I. It's because they know that the Premier League is projected to the tasty billion people in China,
but that's,
who will sign up.
We're maybe watching billboards. Like.
Yep.
But maybe that's a good thing because it doesn't really affect us, and it doesn't mean that you and me are going to lose money on these gambling sites. But your team still gets a big influx of cash.
It affects the most vulnerable people in society.
That's the thing. But culturally in China, they are. Like lucky numbers are very important in China and Chinese culture. So like there is this thing about superstition and it turns into gambling. So yeah,
but you can't just say that the Chinese are the most vulnerable in society. That's a sweeping statement if ever I heard one. There's a billion of them. Like
did we say
have
that
to, they have to look well I thought Flynn said it but let them look All after right. themselves
let them look after themselves
That's how Hanley's going to get elected to power.
Yeah, I don't think it's ridiculous to say that the Chinese are not my problem.
Okay.
Not now. When they're flying overhead, they will be.
The Asian gambling market is of no relevance to me whatsoever. Once it stays away from me, I'm all right. Thank you very much.
Oh, yeah. Stick your head in the sand.
That's it. All the ostrich all day long, baby.
We could use more people like you in this world, Hanley.
I know. Don't I know it?
That was sarcasm. Paddy Power's social media.
Well, I took it and I ran with it. I should be president.
Yeah, maybe I should be president.
Let the Chinese do what they want. Let me do what I want. That is how the world should run.
That's pretty much what the countries do now. That's diplomacy with China currently.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get into geopolitics next week.
Oh, yes.
What's the preferred form of government?
Oh, a segment of each.
each each one, you know?
Yeah. Each one, yeah.
How many
each
segments is that?
750 and counting, I'd say.
Before we finish up, I did want to point out this whole Viper thing. You know, this Tommy Schlug stuff. Because our group of friends, but also other groups of friends I'm in, have all gone crazy for this, right? And in my head, like, the Viper was relevant like 10 years ago or 5 years ago. I know.
So, I thought the same. I never even watched him back then. I'm only seeing him now.
Me neither. But so he's relevant again for some reason, is he?
I guess so.
Yeah, because I watched the most recent video because you said it was funny.
I know.
And I did watch it, and it was kind of funny. I was surprised.
Yeah, this is the thing, because I've never watched them before, and I just thought they'd be shite, because they're that kind of humor that's usually shite. But yeah, it was actually funny.
Yeah, so...
It's an odd one, because I guess, for myself personally, I'm in a position where, you know... When I first came to Ireland, I was like, some of the Irish comedy, I was like, what the fuck is this? What is going on? This isn't universally funny. And I think he falls into that bracket, but it is quite funny if you know what the fuck they're talking about, or he's talking about, or the accents he's doing, or, you know, the impressions he's doing. But I don't know, like, if you showed that to an American, they'd be like, what's going on? For sure. Who is this guy?
I think that often makes it, that's part of the appeal with these things a lot of time, is that you're in on the joke and other people aren't, which makes it feel better to be laughing at it.
It's true. There's a lot of kind of pride behind it too. Like, I mean, Ireland's a small country, and to have, I guess, the amount of comedians that are doing, like, you know, different areas and different demographics of the country, impression wise, it's pretty appealing.
Yeah, it is those kind of accents, but he also has the odd, like, really witty line, which does help. It's not just, remember those naked camera guys who would just go around doing accents or doing funny voices? And I was like, this isn't fucking funny.
That is chronic, yeah.
Yeah. But, whereas this has a bit more to it, I think.
I loved when he was doing intentionally bad comedy on stage. Yes.
Yeah, he had the terrible timing and stuff, yeah.
That's really hard to do, isn't it? Yes, I'd say so.
It's like, because you admire it as well, because you know you could never do something like that.
No.
It'd be too much, but it's hilarious that someone would do it for you to look at.
it's kind of true. Like, I know that Friends gets a lot of stick, right? But do you remember, like, Joey in Friends was, like, an aspiring actor? You know, he's obviously a good actor.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
But when he did those auditions and he absolutely bombed them,
that's
good going.
Like, he had to act badly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. Yeah. That's like a certain skill for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Joey Tribbiani, huh?
I don't know when people started hating Friends, because growing up, I never liked Friends growing up, but, like, people just liked it and it was like a popular thing. And now it seems like people think Friends was shite the whole time. It's like, I grew up disliking Friends because my sister would get the remote and she would put on Friends and I'd be like, fuck's sake. I'd have to leave the room because I never liked it. But there'd be times watching it out of the corner of my eye where something funny would happen and I couldn't help but laugh, and I'd almost resent it that I laughed in front of my sister. She'd be like, ha, see, it is funny. Yeah. And I'd be like, fine. Some parts were genuinely very funny in it. And now I've almost flipped on it and thought it's a lot funnier than people give it credit for. And it's way funnier a lot of the time than in, like, Big Bang Theory or, like, even contemporary shows like, what's that, Will and Grace and Becker. I thought they were shite then, and I think they're shite now.
I always thought Friends was funny, and I actually think it has a lot of rewatchability, but the problem is Comedy Central has had it and Netflix had it as well, to the point where it was all day every day on a screen, and now people are sick of it and they're like, Friends is so fucking like done. It's like we're past Friends now, but it is actually a very funny show. Like, there's a reason it's been so successful.
David Schwimmer, I can't believe people like give out about David Schwimmer and that as well as him not being funny or whatever. He, as an actor in that, was hilarious a lot of the time and really funny. I was saying this to someone as well, that at the start you had Joey was like the stupid, goofy one. Chandler was like the funny one and Ross was the smart one. And then by the end, Ross was the smart one, he was the funny one, and he was the goofy one.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
He just completely out-consumed the whole show. And it became, in a way, it became the Ross show.
Yeah.
Where he's going on about how... It was all about his wife, his wives. Like, Rachel is awesome. Emily is awesome. What are the other ones? I can't remember.
Carol, I think.
Yeah. Actually, yeah. You know, from the beginning, it was the Ross show. Because it was about him. Yeah. Actually, no. Rachel, really, wasn't it?
Well, it kind of then it kind of turned into Chandler and Monica. Then.
Yeah, I hated that. The especially the way Chandler would fluctuate in redness, and you know, he was just kind of weird looking at times in that show.
Yeah,
sure,
he was drugs, right? He was battling drug addiction. Yeah,
full circle.
There we go.
Back to drugs.
Go. I hope it wasn't heroin. No, because he's still alive.
Yeah, no, he's fine. It was just PCP or LSD. One of those other substances.
Yeah, pipette. That's like so red. Lovely.
Matthew quick Perry, one before if you're listening, you can visit anytime. Sorry, Gwen.
I was going to say, quick one before we wrap things up. When it comes to Friends, there's always a divided opinion on like Team Ross, Team Rachel of, you know, who was at fault, who was the worst. Apart from it being like a real toxic relationship that they had anyway, I always felt that Rachel was the bitch, the one at fault, whereas Ross was just a bit dopey. But I feel that that's not the general consensus.
I wonder, is there like a male-female divide on it?
I think so, yeah.
I think probably.
I think, like, it's not black and white because she said, I think we need a break. He took it as we're broken up. Even if you break up with someone, you probably don't go ride someone that very night. But,
no, it's true.
You know, she basically called it quits on him, so whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he didn't go
to his wedding, you know? Though, to tell him... She went to the wedding to try to tell him she loves him or something when he was getting married in London, wasn't it? She went there to sabotage it.
Yeah.
Ross never did something like that to her, I don't think. Did he?
No, and he went out of his way to try and like win her affections. Got all the way to doing it, and she closed him out. He moved on, and then she came back to fuck up his new relationship.
I guess we're Team Ross. Such we need to get Sonia on this to give us her perspective so that we could hear.
Yeah, she can give us a rundown of, like, you know, there's if you've things never we seen don't Friends even before. See.
Yeah.
she's one of the people who's like, oh, don't put Friends on. Come on.
Okay.
So
we'll blindside her with Friends conversation.
I'll try and get her on next time. If there's no interesting football next time, I'll get her on for beginners for football.
Great. Yeah. Can't wait.
Sounds good. Cool. See you later.
Okay.
Happy days.
Okay. Out.
All right.
You've been listening to the Put Them Under Pressure podcast. For more of our content, make sure that you follow us on YouTube, Spotify, and Facebook. Outro music.